I think that if the Norwegian state doesn't start seriously putting its money where its mouth is and start doing something properly to fulfill its obligation, then this climate lawsuit is just going to be the first one.
Welcome to Planet Rules, where we explore law, politics, and the climate emergency. It's early November 2019, and a panel of three judges of Norway's appeals court is hearing arguments in the so-called 112 constitutional challenge. Paragraph 112 of Norway's constitution guarantees citizens a right to a healthy and sustainable environment. Civil society organizations, including Greenpeace Norway and the Nature of Youth movement, are suing their own government over its decision to award licenses for oil and gas exploration in the Barents Sea, offshore in Norway's far north. They say that the move is a violation of their constitutional right to a sustainable environment. The government says the constitution has nothing to do with it. My name is Mark Taylor, and I'm a researcher based here in Oslo, Norway. In advance of this week's hearing in Norway's constitutional challenge, I sat down with Professor Beate Sjåfjell, a professor of company law at the University of Oslo, who's a leading expert on the way that law is responding to the fact that our biosphere has physical, scientifically measurable limits. I spoke with Professor Sjåfjell about the background to the case, what's at issue, and where it's headed.
The Constitution has, since 1992, had a provision stating that we have a right to a viable environment for us and for future generations. It also says that people in Norway have the right to information about planned activities and their environmental impact. And thirdly, a rather vaguely formulated provision that the state was meant to follow this up. My analysis of this was that there was a duty here. And in 2014, the constitution was amended as a part of a large revision of the whole constitution, where the provision also was placed into the human rights chapter, and to emphasize that the state has a duty to act where necessary to ensure our right to a viable environment. The constitution, the last provision of the constitution was changed, the last paragraph was changed to make clearer that the state has a duty to act. So since 2014, it has been even clearer than before, in my opinion, that this is a provision that gives us a right to a viable environment for us and future generations, and that the state has a duty to do what is necessary.
Who are the parties to the case? Who's suing whom?
It's Greenpeace and an organization called Nature and Youth, with the support of the Grandparents Climate Campaign, that have sued the Norwegian state for opening up a new area in the vulnerable north in the Arctic region for oil and gas exploitation. And the reason that Greenpeace, together with Nature and Youth and with the support of the Grandparents Climate Campaign, sued the Norwegian state when they opened up this new area for licensing for more oil and gas exploitation, is that they argue, and I strongly agree with that, that it's something that is totally unacceptable if we are going to have any chance at all of securing a stable climate, which is one of the ecological limits that we must try to stay within. The Norwegian constitution gives us a right to a viable environment and a duty for the state to do what is necessary to ensure that. And the Paris Agreement and the scientific basis for that tells us where the limit is when it comes to climate. So it's not open for discussion. We know that we must do everything we can to stay within 2 degrees global warming. And we know also, based on a very large body of research, that most of the reserves, as it's called, of petroleum that we know about need to stay in the ground if we're going to have any chance of ensuring, of achieving that goal. And we also know that there are many difficult decisions to be made in finding out how to achieve the goals of the Paris Agreement. But there are some things that are pretty obvious. And when we know that we can't exploit all of the oil and gas that is possible to exploit on this planet, then we need to avoid at least those areas as a starting point where the environmental impacts of the oil and gas exploitation are especially high, outcome for the industry are low. So there are two examples of that has also been substantiated through an economic analysis of what of the known petroleum resources can we even discuss exploiting in light of the Paris Agreement, and which ones do we have to leave. And the two examples of those that we obviously have to leave are tar sand projects, like the Canadian tar sand projects, and oil and gas exploitation in the vulnerable north. So by opening up a new round of licensing in the vulnerable north, the Norwegian state has gone so expressly beyond any kind of political discretion in what it should do to ensure a viable environment that it was really just opening itself up to being sued.
Is this common in Norway, these kinds of lawsuits?
No, it's very seldom. And the lack of lawsuits based on the environmental provision has also led to the perception, the impression that the environmental provision doesn't really have any legal meaning because it hasn't been used. But when that provision was strengthened, or rather clarified, in 2014, it opened the door to, it was really a call, although I don't think the Norwegian Parliament meant it like that. It was really a call for somebody to start that court process to find out exactly where are the limits.
It's not part of Norway's legal culture, so to speak.
Well, it's not totally unheard of. We have had very famous court cases previously that have had to do also with indigenous people's rights, the famous Alta case. So it's not unheard of, but it hasn't been done in the climate context previously. So that is new. And climate is especially difficult to pin down what is a part of securing a viable environment, and what is going beyond that limit. Where is the line in the sand? Because we know it's a global issue.
Right. And especially if, as in Norway, you're exporting almost all of your oil,
yes.
Whereas running your energy system or your energy grid in Norway from renewable hydroelectric power.
Yes, which has given Norway the opportunity to build up an international reputation of being a very environmentally friendly country. And Norway is also proud of the Paris Agreement, worked hard to achieve that agreement. And then the Norwegian minister, the previous Norwegian minister of climate and the environment, Vidar Helgesen, signed up to two different coalitions for those who would be front runners with achieving the goals of the Paris Agreement.
Right. But nonetheless, Norway continues to be a significant exporter of oil. What was your interpretation of the way the government approached this case?
My impression was that once it got as far as a lawsuit, that they were very concerned about it, that they've put a lot of energy into trying to prevent this from being taken seriously by the court. They've, in spite of having revised the environmental provision in the constitution in 2014, they then A year later, I argued that the environmental provision is just a political statement. It doesn't have any kind of legal weight. The argument was also that the Parliament signed off on the opening of the 23rd round of licensing. So that means that the Norwegian Parliament has approved of the government's proposal and has accepted that this is within within the scope of what they can do according to the constitution. So that was an argument that was used a lot in the case and before the case came up, that leaving this to the courts would be undermining our democracy, because it would be taking power away not only from the government but also from the parliament and letting the courts decide. But that seems to ignore that a good democracy has a balance between the executive branch and the legislative one and the courts. We need the checks and balances that include the courts, and sometimes the courts are the last possibility in a democratic system. So saying that going to the courts is undemocratic is based on a lack of understanding of history and why we have the system that we have.
So let me ask you, what happened in that first round in the courthouse here in Oslo?
Mm. Well, what happened in the first round, which is very important now for the second round, is that the court agreed with Greenpeace and the others that we do have a legal right to a viable environment for us and future generations, that the state has a duty to secure that, and that a decision can be set aside as being a violation of the Constitution, Article 112. That was very important that the court said, very positive, because Norwegian courts do have, to a certain extent, a reputation for being very state-friendly. So it was very important that that was said. But then the court nevertheless found for the state in its decision, because the court said that environmental impacts of the oil and gas exploitation in the Arctic, they were very limited based on the arguments from the state. And they said that Norway's contribution to climate change also was very limited, because they delimited against the use of the oil and gas. They said, which of course is true, that the main climate gas emissions comes not from exploiting oil and gas, although there are emissions there as well, but from using it. And as the oil and gas is exported to other countries, it's not Norway's problem that leads to climate change.
What's your view of how that fits into the international framework we were discussing earlier around the Paris Accords? Doesn't that notion that if we export carbon, it's not our problem, kind of undermine that?
It does. So and there has been a lot of reaction to that statement, also from more conservative legal scholars who have said that just doesn't hold water. So it's going to be very interesting to see now in the next round what happens, because I think that the judge landed on that type of argument as a basis for finding for the state came as a surprise to many. I think that they had expected that if the court found for the state, that it would be not on that kind of basis. So now Greenpeace and Nature and Youth have also now been joined by Norway's oldest environmental NGO, and together with the Grandparents Climate Campaign, they will be now prepared for that argument. So it'll be very interesting to see how that is spelled out. And there's also another important element to that whole discussion about that the Parliament signed off on the 23rd round of licensing, and that therefore the court should just accept that they assess that properly, and then it's not for the court to go in and have a different opinion on the environmental impacts and the climate impacts, is that the parliament as well as the Norwegian people were misled because the impact assessments that were done before the 23rd round of licensing was opened were so faulty. This is something that I've done a lot of research on together with a colleague, Anita Halvorsen. We wrote a large article about this, which was published in an oil, gas and energy law review before the case came up. And we went through all of the impact assessments in that case, and we found out that climate was hardly mentioned at all. Climate was something that was such a big topic that should be just dealt with elsewhere. The environmental impacts that the scientists who had been asked to send in their reports pointed out, they were not dealt with seriously. There was never a proper discussion of, based on these impact assessments, should we open up the 23rd round of licensing? The language was more that, okay, there are some environmental issues here, so we need to put into place some protective measures when we open up the 23rd round of licensing. And as I said, the climate issue was never properly discussed. The Norwegian Constitution, Article 112, was barely mentioned at all. So when the Norwegian Parliament then agreed that this area could be opened up, they had a totally faulty basis for doing that. And this also goes, talking about democracy, this also goes to our whole political system, because we, most of us, tend to think that when there is an impact assessment and a decision is made, that that it is a proper impact assessment, and you may disagree or agree with the conclusion, but that there is a proper basis for it. But there wasn't. And that in itself is a violation of the Constitution. It's this huge elephant in the room that that Norwegian politicians generally, with some exceptions, don't seem to know how to deal with. And that's why this case is so important also, because it's possible for politicians to talk their way out of a debate, but when it actually becomes a court case, then they have to deal with it seriously. And so I can just hope that the court in this next round, or maybe in the Supreme Court, will be brave enough to just cut through all the greenwashing of the Norwegian state and take a serious look at what the Norwegian state is doing, as opposed to just what it is saying.
So Norway is living this contradiction, in a sense, between its international commitments, potentially its constitutional obligations of the state, and business as usual. So how do they manage that? How does the political consensus in Norway manage those apparently contradictory?
Well, the way that they're managing, have been managing that contradiction, that paradox up till now, has just been trying to ignore the elephant in the room. Continue speaking a lot about how important it is to mitigate climate change, to work hard with that, and at the same time not discussing the question of Norway's oil and gas exploitation. Norway hasn't achieved its own the climate mitigation goals that the Norwegian state, the Norwegian parliament have set. They have not been achieved, but then they just set new goals sometime into the future. And I think that the story has been told so well for so many decades that Norway is based on oil and gas, that the idea of starting to discuss seriously how to change that is just really, really scary. Yes, it is true that a lot of workplaces in Norway are linked to the Norwegian oil and gas industry, and a part of the Norwegian wealth is from that. But that doesn't mean that Norway never had any other possibilities for building up a welfare system. Sweden has managed to do it without oil and gas. And they are in a similar situation when it comes to other natural resources. And most importantly, the transition is coming whether we like it or not. So the longer Norway waits to start making a serious plan for that transition, the tougher it's going to get. At the moment, we still have lots of money, lots of technological expertise in Norway. By starting now the transition that needs to come, we could have the market leaders of tomorrow in various environmentally friendly areas, and it would be possible to continue having a good welfare state in Norway. But if we continue thinking that we are just going to stay in some kind of bubble where we can continue with oil and gas exploitation and export all the problems, then it's going to hit us sooner or later. I think that if the Norwegian state doesn't start seriously putting its money where its mouth is and start doing something properly to fulfill its obligation, then this climate lawsuit is just going to be the first one.
Planet Rules is produced by Laws of Rule Podcasts with editing and graphic assistance from Nepotism Productions. For updates on this and other cases, be sure to follow at Laws of Rule on Twitter. And there you can also drop me a line with suggestions for future podcasts on law, politics, and the politics of the rule of law. Until next time, thanks for listening.